There are 39 milahot, which constitute forms of work forbidden on the Sabbath. It's the why behind the way we do the things we do. Join Rabbi Moshe Schnurb now for Hilchos Shabbos, only on 101.9 High FM.
This is Soul to Soul on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Vayikra, Mamish Erev Purim, Tov Shin Mem Dalel, as we prepare for Shabbos Parsha Zohar, followed immediately by Chag Purim, one of the pinnacles of our Yiddish year coming up right now, and hopefully we're all getting ready for it, not just in the physical sense of getting our shlachmones and preparing our sudas, but getting our minds and our hearts and our souls ready to experience and to appreciate the great miracles of Purim. Today's program, as always, is sponsored for a refuah shleima for many of the cholim of Klal Yisrael, for Avraham ben Golda, for David ben Clara, for Hananya Shalom ben Ilana Nava, for Matanel Yehuda ben Saraleah, for Doiv ben Esther, and for Yosef Yitzchok ben Bela. B'soich Shor Cholei Yisrael, may all of the Cholim be Zoiche to a refuah shalema b'korev mamish, especially in the yontif of Purim, yontif imelizai korev urfuah korev lovei letaka, in the schus of the simcha of Purim, have a refuah shalema mamish, refuah sanefesh, refuah saguf. We're going to speak for a short while about Parshas Vayikra, and then we're going to move on to some of the talk about Purim. Nefesh ki secheta. If a person will do an aveira, Bishkaga, unintentionally, Mikol Mitzvos Hashem, from any, from amongst all the other commandments of Hashem, Asher Loi Seasena, that in fact may not be done. The Torah goes on to say that one who sins Bishoigek, unintentionally, must bring a korban offering to atone his sin. We wonder, why does one bring a korban for an action when he committed it unintentionally, with no malice or forethought? So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik mentions that he compares it actually with one who is transporting sort of inexpensive glassware. Since their value is negligible, so he moves the glasses quickly without giving much thought to the endeavor. What is the worst thing that could happen? No, some would break, right? It's not the end of the world. If one were transporting expensive crystal or other equally fragile pieces of very expensive glassware, however, there's no doubt that he would exhibit great caution and extreme care to move the glassware slowly. One is usually circumspect with items of great value. A similar idea applies with Shmiras HaMitzvahs, right? The attentiveness and care that we show to our mitzvah observance is the telltale sign of the esteem we have for mitzvahs, the value we place on mitzvahs, and sort of concurrently, and on our relationships with Hashem, is evident in the manner in which we guard against infraction in our observance. B'shoigeg means that it was unintentional. But when one is very careful, the chances of an inadvertent act occurring greatly, greatly diminish. Rav Yecheskel Abramsky cites Chazal, Gemara in Kedushin, on Daf Peyala from Beis, who states that when reading the laws concerning unintentional averus, Rav Akiva would break down in bitter weeping. He would say, if in regard to one who, let's say, intended to eat treif, he intended to eat some pork, and by mistake, kosher lamb came up in his hands. So the Torah nevertheless says that atonement and forgiveness are required. All the more so does one who intended to eat pork, and pork came up in his hands, that he must certainly atone and seek forgiveness. See, we have an enormous responsibility because we are not dealing with sort of inexpensive pottery. The repercussions of our failures are actually enormous. This is 101.9 High FM, soul to soul on your radio. We'll be back in a moment with so much more.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnerb, only on 101.9 High FM.
101.9 High FM, this is Soul to Soul, back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Vayikra, Parshas Zohar, Tav Shin Pei Dalet, as we stand on the brink of Chag HaPurim HaBoleinu L'Tovah. We're so excited, we're so looking forward to this amazing, amazing Chag. And let's talk a little bit about quite an interesting aspect, I think, of Purim. There's a Midrash that's brought actually in the Midrash on Esther at the beginning of the sixth chapter of the Midrash, where we introduce someone that we didn't sort of think was actually involved in the Megillah. We know about all the characters in the Megillah, about Ahasuerus and his duplicity, and of course Haman, Harasha, and Vashti, and on the other side Mordechai and Esther, and of course Harvina, all the cameo roles that are played. These are the characters. In the Midrash in Perek Vav, we're introduced to someone called David HaMelech, King David. And the Midrash says that David says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Master of the Universe, quotes the Pasuk, Zochreini Hashem B'Tzayin Amecha, remember me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with a desire for your nation. And David elaborated and said, at the time when you're going to make the tremendous salvation, the tremendous miracles for the Jewish nation through Mordechai and Esther. David HaMelech is already foretelling, is already prophesizing about the salvation that will take place in the time of Mordechai and Esther. So we see there, interestingly enough, that there's some kind of connection, some sort of glue that exists between the miracle of Purim and David HaMelech, even though they lived several hundred years apart. There seems to be some kind of a connection. So in the Yalkut Ruveni, which is one of the less famous Midrashim, sort of towards the end of the Sefer, he explains something very strange about Purim. And that is that Purim seems to be divided into two separate days, right? In all the places that are not walled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, we celebrate Purim on the 14th day of Adar. And in those places surrounded by a wall, getting all the way back to the time when the Jews came into Israel, led by Yeshua, they keep Purim on the 15th. And this is a very, very interesting and unusual thing. We don't find by any other Chag that there's a different day for observing it, depending where you are. Yes, we understand that outside of Israel, by the major Chagim, we keep a second day. We keep an extra day for whatever various reasons there are. But still, it's the same date. We're keeping the Chag on the same date as everyone else's. Why is it that Purim has two separate days? And the Yalkut Ruveni explains, because David HaMelech was the 14th generation from Avram Avinu. And Shlomo Melech is then Shlomo Melech, the son of David Melech. He is then the 15th generation after Avraham Avinu. And corresponding to that, listen to this, corresponding to that, there are 2 days of Purim, one on the 14th and one on the 15th. David HaMelech corresponds to the Purim that we celebrate in all the non-walled cities, which falls out then on the 14th. Why? Because if you take the words David, so it's Dalid, Vav, Dalid. Dalid is the gematria value of 4. Vav is 6. And Dalid is again 4. That comes out to 14. And Shlomo HaMelech, he corresponds to the day of Purim, which is celebrated by those who live in the walled cities. Because if you take what we call in gematria the Mispar Katan, in other words, just the first digit of each letter of his name. So Shin, we take just the 3. And the Lamed, we take just the 3. And the Mem, we take just the 4. And the Hey, just the 5. So it's 3 + 3 + 4 + 5, which is a total of 15. So David HaMelech is corresponding to the Purim we celebrate in the open cities, and Shlomo somehow corresponds to the Purim that is kept in the walled cities. Now, if we just carry this a little bit further, and this is just fun in honor of Purim, if we take the name Haman, and again, we just take the first letter of the gematria of his name. So the Hey, we take the 5, and the Mem, we take the 4, and the Nun, which is 50, but we take just the 5. So again, that equals 14. And if we do the same thing with Mordechai, if we take just the first letter of each gematria total, so Mordechai is 4 for the Mem, and 2 for the Resh, that's 6, and another 4 for the Dalit, that's 10, and Chaf, take the 2, that's 12, and Yud is 1. So Mordechai is 13. And I'm sure you're going to figure out already, that if we do that to Esther, so Esther is 1, and the 6 of the Samach is 7. Tuf is 400, which is to take the 4. So that's 11. And the Resh is 2. It's also 13. So Haman is 14. And Esther and Mordechai are only 13. And therefore, that gave, on a certain level, that gave Haman a dominance over Mordechai and Esther, because his gematria is 1 higher. He's 14. And therefore, they needed the help of David HaMelech, whose gematria of his name is also 14. And he had the ability to overcome Haman, because by Haman, the number 14 is only using the partial gematria, only the first number gematria. While David HaMelech, it's the entire gematria of his name is 14. And therefore, David is stronger than Haman. And he says, this is all alluded to in the Pasuk. In the Pasuk we're going to read on Purim morning, it says, Ki yad al kes ka, because there's a hand on the kise, on the throne of Hashem, milchamol Hashem ba'amalek, Hashem has an eternal war against Amalek, Midor Dor, throughout all the generations. In other words, how is it possible for us to wage war against Amalek? It's only using the power of David HaMelech, which is in the full totality of his name, the Gematria, being 14. And therefore, it also says, we say in the Shemoneh Esrei, V'chise David Avdecha Mehera B'Secha Tochin. May the throne of David your servant be quickly established in Yerushalayim. So if we take, and sorry, I'm just having fun because it's Purim. If we take the total gematria of the words Kise David, so Kise is Chav Samach Aleph is 81. David, we already know, is 14. So 81 and 14 is 95. Haman in his full gematria, hey, Mem Nun, is also 95. And therefore, it's specifically David HaMelech, which is the one who has the power and the strength against Haman. It's the Kisei David. It's the throne of David that's able to overcome the power of Haman. Intrigued? We'll be back in a moment with much, much more. This is 101.9 Chai FM. Stay with us.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh. Parshas Vayikra. Shabbos Parshas Zohar. And we stand ready to welcome and embrace Chag HaPurim with all its beautiful mitzvahs, all its beautiful observances. We're talking about David HaMelech creeping his way into the Megillah. And you know, there's a Gemara. There's more on Daf Yud Beis Amud Beis in Megillah. On the Pasuk, says, Ish Yehudi, Haya B'Shushan Abira. There was a Yehudi in Shushan, the capital, Ushmoy Mordechai. His name was Mordechai ben Yoyer, ben Shimi, ben Kish, Ish Yemini. Now the Gemara says, I'm a bit confused. Because on the one hand, you call him Ish Yehudi, which seems to imply that he came from the tribe of Yehuda. And at the end of the Pasuk, calls him Ish Yemini, which implies that he came from the tribe of Binyamin. Which one is it, Yehuda or Binyamin? Answers the Gemara in its third answer. The Rabbanon say that there were the two families actually were in competition with each other. The family of Yehuda said, I'm the one that caused that Mordechai should be born. Why? Because David did not kill Shimi ben Gera. Shimi ben Gera cursed David, and really, by strict legislation, someone who curses the king is considered a renegade and is liable to death. But David did not put him to death. And Mordechai, we know, was from the descendants of Shimi. And Binyamin said, no, Mordechai comes from me. So there was this rivalry between the two tribes. Now, according to this opinion of the Rabbanon, Mordechai is called Ish Yehudi because David, who was from the tribe of Yehuda, didn't kill his alta Zayda of Mordechai, who was Shimi ben Gera. And through that, Mordechai came into the world. Comes out, therefore, that in those first words in the Megillah, which speak about Mordechai, even before it mentions his name or the name of his tribe, we already see a connection that exists between the birth of Mordechai and his ancestor, the actions of his ancestor David, who didn't kill Shimi ben Gera, the Zayda of Mordechai, and that already needs a little bit of explanation. Now, the very fact that David didn't kill Shimi, in spite of the fact that he was actually, as I said, liable to be put to death, the reason is, as in fact we're told in the book of Shmuel, that at a time when David HaMelech was running away, fleeing from his own son, Avshalom, who was chasing after him. So when David HaMelech reached a place that was called Bahurim, so a man from the family of Shaul, whose name was Shimi ben Gera, says, Yotso, Yotso Mekalel. He was coming out and he was cursing David. And Vayisko Bavonim es David. He threw stones at David HaMelech. And Avishai ben Tzuruya said to the king, why is this, he calls him a Kelev Ames, why is this dead dog cursing my master the king? Let me go and I'll make him one head shorter. And David said, no. Why are you getting involved? Let him curse. Why? Ki Hashem omaloi kalelas David. He's doing because Hashem decreed that he had to curse a David. I had to hear these curses. And who knows why HaKadosh Baruch Hu did that. And therefore, he didn't kill him. Now, in Chavetz Chaim's Sefer, Shmiras HaLoshon Sha'as HaTevunah, he says, just like we find by David HaMelech Alav HaShalom, at the time when Shimi ben Gera threw earth at him and really belittled him, and the servants of David wanted to avenge the honor of David HaMelech for this, David HaMelech did not allow them to do it, and he accepted upon himself the degradation. He accepted upon himself the curses, and he said, Hashem Omar Leikalel. Hashem told him to curse me. And a Chazal say that at that time, when David HaMelech was so understanding and so accepting of what the will of Hashem was, David merited that he would be the fourth leg of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chariot. That's what the Chofetz Chaim says. In other words, David HaMelech, with all the incredible challenge that he faced, he's running away from his own son who's rebelling against him. And he understands that when Shimi comes out to curse him and stones him, this is not really Shimi doing it. But at the end of the day, all it is he's a messenger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem Omar Lo Yikalel. Hashem told him to curse me. And because of that, David HaMelech bequeathed to his children after him the recognition that whatever challenges, whatever difficulties one faces, don't look at the actual difficulty. And don't look at how bad you feel and how insulted you are. But rather, look at the one who sent him, who created that situation. On the Bari Olam, on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who sent this difficulty and this challenge to us. And therefore, where Haman came with his terrible, awesome decree to destroy and wipe out and remove from the earth the name of Yiddishkeit, Mordechai recognized that this is not really Haman. This is not Haman who's doing this. But he's just the puppet. He's just the agent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who wants something from us that we wants us to change our ways, to improve our actions, and to do tshuva. And when Klal Yisrael recognized this, then the decree disappeared. Because that's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu really wants. And as the Gemara says in Chulin, Daf Kuf Lamates, Esther min HaTorah minayin, where do we see an allusion, a hint to Esther in the actual Torah? Megillas Esther is part of Nach, but not actually part of the Torah. Is there any hint or allusion to Esther in the Torah? And the Gemara says, yes. There's a pasuk that says, in Parshas Vayelech, V'onoichi haster astir ponai bayomuhu, and I will hide my face from you on that day. And the Vilna Gaon explains that the whole purpose of the Megillah is to show the revelation of Anoichi Hashem. I am Hashem, the incredible Hashkoch and the incredible involvement of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even when it seems like it is Haster Astir. Even though it seems like, where's Hashem? Hashem doesn't seem to be present. Hashem is there, hiding behind the cloud, hiding and doing what he needs to do, but in a very secretive way. The implement that we can use to reveal this tremendous lesson of Megillas Esther was Mordechai Yehudi. He was the one that understood this. And therefore, straight away, in the very, very first words, where the Megillah introduces us to Mordechai, it already hints to the fact, to that event, where David withstood the tremendous, tremendous test, right? When he saw the Ashkoch of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the hidden situation. Ish Yehudi. Why is it called Yehudi? That was his greatest, greatest moment when he saved the life of Shimi ben Gera, as difficult and as challenging as that must have been for him, because he realized it was all the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, Chazal specifically connect David HaMelech to the tribe of Yehuda. And in fact, he's called the name Mordechai HaYehudi several times in the Megillah. He's called Mordechai HaYehudi. Why? Because by him withstanding that test of David HaMelech, to see the Ashkoch of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even in the darkest moments of running, of fleeing away from his own son Avshalom, and the curses of Shimi, that strength, that incredible, incredible resilience, that produced Mordechai. And through him, it was revealed for all generations the incredible evidence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement, even in the most desperate, hidden situation. And by the way, once we've mentioned the foregoing by David HaMelech of the insult done to him, and on the other hand, the opinion of Avisha ben Tzuruya, who wanted to kill him, so perhaps now we can give a whole new understanding to their argument. The Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Yutes brings a story about the servant of Yanai HaMelech who killed someone. And because of that, so they actually brought Yanai the king to the Beis Din. So Shimon ben Shetach, who was the chief dayan, the chief judge of the Beis Din, turned to him and said to him, stand on your feet and let them say testimony against you. So all the Rishonim asked about this. I don't understand. The Gemara elsewhere in Masechah Shavuos says that a Talmud Chacham doesn't need to stand up in the Beis Din because of the honor of Torah. And it seems that the honor of a king is even greater than the honor of a Talmud Chacham, because it says that even if a king wants to forgo his honor, he has no right to do so. But a Rav who wants to forgo his honor, he's allowed to do so, the Gemara in Kedushin says. So Tosfos answers that the honor of the Talmud Chacham is certainly greater than the honor of the king. And therefore, Talmud Chacham does not need to stand up in the Beis Din. But a king is obligated to stand. So if so, what's the distinction? Why is it that a king who forgoes his honor is not allowed to, while a Talmud Chacham can? So Tosfos explains that the Torah of the Talmud Chacham, which is what actually obligates us to honor him, that becomes his Torah. As in fact, the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah that originally Torah is called HaKadosh Baruch by the name of Hashem, and later on it becomes the Torah of the Talmud Chacham, as it says, B'seiras Hashem Cheftzai. His desire is the Torah of Hashem. And in his own Torah, he works. When a person puts effort into his Torah learning, it, so to speak, becomes his own Torah. And therefore, he can pass on his own honor. It's his honor. However, the honor of a king is not his honor. It's comes to him because of the Hashem has commanded that we have to show honor to a king. And therefore, it's a mitzvah. He has no right to uproot that mitzvah. Rabbeinu Yoni actually explains slightly differently. He says the reason why a king cannot pass up on his honor is because his honor is actually the honor of the whole Jewish nation. That their king is so recognized, is so renowned, and therefore he has no right to pass up on the honor of the Jewish nation. So both Tosfos and Rabbeinu Yona hold that the honor of a king doesn't come from himself and it doesn't belong to him. And the difference between the two explanations is only based on the basic question, right? What is the honor of the kingdom? Is it the honor of Hashem or the honor of the people? And perhaps that was actually the argument between David and Avishai. David HaMelech was on the run. He was out of the palace. He was not in his normal situation. And therefore there's no longer the honor of the people. So therefore, does the king have the right to forgo his honor if the honor of the king is a din in the honor of the nation? Well, the nation has rebelled against him. There's no longer an honor of the honor of the malchus dependent on the people, and therefore maybe he could pass up on the honor. However, if the honor is a din of the honor of Hashem, so as long as in Shemayim they haven't made someone else the king, so David HaMelech is still the king, and therefore he has no right to pass up on his honor. They tell a story about the Baron of Mayanto Rothschild, that one time he came to a little village, right, in early in the morning, and he asked the first person that he saw, what time is Shacharis? So they say, he told him, at 7 o'clock, the man answered. So the Baron went straight to the shul, went inside, put on his talis and his tefillin, and he waited. Right? When he looked at his watch and it was 7 o'clock, and he looked around him and he saw that there's a minyan. And the Rav and the Chazan and the Dayan were all there. So, and they hadn't started yet. Who are they waiting for? So the Baron turned to the person sitting next to him, and he asked him, how come the tefillah hasn't started? 7 o'clock. So he explained to no, the gavir of the town hadn't arrived, and therefore they were all waiting for him. 5 minutes passed, 10 minutes, and they're all waiting. At 7:20, the gavir entered the shul, right, and as if he's just sort of yawning, as if he had just sort of woken up after a good night's sleep. And he went to his place on the Mizrach wall, sat down next to the Rav, put on his tefillin, and then he signaled to this chazan that he's allowed to start the davening. So Baron Rothschild was so upset by the chutzpah of this rich person. The whole tzibur had to wait. The Rav had to wait. And he took his time as if the whole world was, in his pocket. So the Baron decided that he was going to put him in his place. Right? Came time for laning. And the Baron asked the Gaba if he could get an aliyah. When the Gaba made a mishaberach for the Baron, so he asked him, says, "Nu, how much bavu shiit and how much you going to give?" So the Baron answered, I'm going to donate the value of all the wealth of this gvir." The Gaba, who didn't know that next to him was standing Baron Rothschild, he said to the Baron, are you Meshugger? This gvir, he has a fortune." However, the Baron looked at him quite calmly and just repeated his words. Says, "Bavur, I'm going to donate the entire value of the wealth of this gvir." So the Gaba got upset. He turned to the Baron and he says, "Sir, don't make a leitzanis here. If you want to donate, so give an amount. And if you're not interested to donate, so no one says you have to donate. Go back to your place and then be well." The Baron said no. He stood in his place and he said quite in a sort of calm way, "I already told you I want to make a donation. And I've given exactly the amount I'm going to give. I want to give the full value of this gavir's assets." Intrigued? Stay around for our next segment.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 High FM.
101.9 High FM, this is Soul to Soul, back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Vayikra, and Shabbos Parshas Zohar, just before the Chag of Purim that will begin Be'ez Hashem Habo Leinu Toiva on Moitzei Shabbos and Sunday. For those just joining us, we are in the middle of a little bit of an interesting story about the Baron Rothschild, who came to a shul and incensed by the gaiva, the arrogance of a local wealthy person, has basically challenged him. And he got an aliyah and he offered to make a donation that was equal to the entire fortune of this gavir. So the Gaba asked Baron Rothschild, "Tell me, do you actually have the amount to donate?" So the Baron smiled and he answered, "I have even 1,000 times more than this amount." Now, there's a certain language that only Gaboim understands. And this Gaba was an old, experienced Gaba who understood this language. I don't know how, but because it's been a very, very long time since I've been a Gaba, but the Gaba understood that this guy wasn't joking and that very likely the person standing right next to him was the Baron Rothschild in himself. So, and what he says is to be taken absolutely serious. And he says that we're not going to carry on the davening until we sort of conclude this deal. So the Gaba ran straight away to the Gvir and asked him, said, excuse me, could you tell me exactly what your net value is? One could imagine that the Gvir did not respond that favorably. He sort of turned a little bit red and fumed in anger when he heard the question. And the mami, she almost smacked the Gaba across the face. But the Gaba wouldn't let go. Says, Baron Rothschild is in the shul and he wants to give a donation that's equal to the full value of your entire assets. So I'm asking you, please tell me, how much are you worth? So that I can then tell Baron Rothschild exactly how much he has to give. The Gaba is pushing him a bit. So the truth was that in spite of the Gaba's pressure, the Gavir was not going to open up. He had no intention of agreeing to reveal publicly exactly how much his estate is worth. So the Gaba got really upset and he called out, says, why are you being so silent? Did I ask you to make a donation? All I've asked is I want to know how much money you have. Why are you not telling me? Right? Because of your obstinance, we are going to lose the most incredible donation that we ever got. And we'll be able to help all the needy families in town for a very, very long time with this donation. So by this time the Gavir was openly angry on the chutzpah of the Gaba, who kept going and asking the same question, the same prying into his very, very private matters. But without a choice, the tefillah carried on with this very, very tense atmosphere. When the tefillah was over, but the Gaba did not relax. So he organized the entire kehillah that they should all do a demonstration outside the house of the Gavir. And that's what he was going to organize. But the Baron signaled to him, leave it, not to do that. He says, I have the ability, said the Baron, to actually verify exactly how much wealth he has. I'll do it myself, said the Baron. And he went to the relevant authorities, and after a little bit of a research, so he arrived at what this person's net worth actually was. And whatever the Baron imagined that his wealth might have been, he was in for a surprise. It became clear that the whole sort of power of wealth that the Gavir had was all one big bluff, one big balloon just blown up full of hot air and almost entirely empty. People get sort of jealous about what other people have, and at the very end, it often comes out that the person they're jealous of actually has nothing. The beautiful car he had was a loan. Even the flat that he had on his name, it didn't belong to him. But he knows how to play around, and we eat his luxury, and we kind of are fooled by a person's external persona. And this is really to teach us that really all of us wear masks. You know, we talk about Purim, people getting dressed up, putting on masks. The reality is everyone lives in a costume. One person might look really, really happy, really satisfied, but again, it's all external. You have no idea what actually is going on behind the closed doors of his house inside. So what are we jealous of? What does anyone have a right to be jealous of somebody else? Purim, the point of Purim is to reach a level of such real simcha that we learn to stop looking at other people, stop being jealous of other people. Everyone else is wearing a mask. Live your life calmly and peacefully, and don't worry about what other people have or don't have, and you'll be a much, much happier person. As we always do at this segment of the show, to give the important times and details that are necessary for this coming weekend, of course, this weekend of Shabbos, Parshas Vayikra, and Parshas Zohar. So let's get started. This afternoon, the earliest time to light your Shabbos candles will be at 5:01. 5:01 is the earliest time you can light your Shabbos candles, and let's go for it. This is such a great Ruach Nistik, a special weekend. Let's start it as soon as we can. Let's get the house ready. Let's get the food hot. Let's get ourselves balmed, and let's welcome in the incredible Kedusha of this Shabbos. If for whatever reason you can't manage to get done by 5:01, so the latest time to light your candles is at 5:58. 5:58 is the latest time to light your candles. Do not rely on those minutes afterwards, even though there's a fortune to do it. It's Shabbos and then it's Purim. You have to get everything packed before Shabbos. It's such a busy day. Yeah, but remember, there's an absolute deadline. 5:58 is your absolute deadline. Don't say, well, there's another 18 minutes after Shkin. No, there isn't. Those, as I always say, those minutes are for emergency situations only, not to be used by sort of regular people in a regular lifestyle. So at 5:58, everything needs to be organized. We can't obviously do anything at that point for Purim. It's just the Shabbos, and we welcome Shabbos into our homes. Shkia is at 16 minutes past 6. So again, that's the really, really absolute latest time for anything. And therefore, if a person wants to make sure that he's said Shema before he sits down to his meal, which almost all shuls will probably do, all you have to do is daven Ma'ariv after 6:34, and you're in the money. You are ready to be able to sit down and enjoy a Shabbos meal together with your family and friends, and make it a great one. Tomorrow, of course, is Parshas Vayikra and also Parshas Zohar. Our custom is that everyone must hear Parshas Zohar. The men must hear it. Even the women in many, many communities have the custom that they must come and hear it. So find out what time in your shul particularly they will get to Parshas Zohar, which is read at the end of the laning as a maftir. And then, of course, there's also a special haftarah that is also very, very important to listen to. And then it carries on as a beautiful, beautiful Shabbos. It's an amazing, actually, way to go into Purim rather than going to Purim fasting as we usually do, and we can't wait to get out of the Megillah because we want to break our fast. It's nice to go in with the Shabbos. We'll have our lunch, we'll have Shalshudas, and we'll be in a far, far more relaxed state of mind. Shabbos Kodesh ends tomorrow night at 6:46. 6:46 is the end of Shabbos, and then, of course, every shul has its schedule, when they're going to daven Ma'ariv, when they're going to hear the Megillah, and we begin the Purim festivities. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment, and this is the greatest Jewish radio station in all of Africa.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul, back on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Vayikra, Parshas Zohar, just before the Chag of Purim. We're so excited, so looking forward to it. So just in the last couple of minutes we have today, let's just review maybe some of the really important halachas regarding Purim. First of all, of course, the most important thing is the hearing of the Megillah. The Megillah has to be heard twice. Once on Matzah Shabbos, once on Saturday night, and then again sometime during the day on Sunday. One time is not enough. You must hear it both by night and by day, preferably in shul. The bigger the crowd that hears it, the greater the publicity of the miracle is. Obviously, if you're not able to go to shul, then arrange for someone to read for you at home. But if you can go to shul, then that certainly is the place to be for Purim. You must hear the Megillah. You must hear every word. Bring a chumash along so you can follow inside. And therefore, if you by any chance miss a word, you can then just read those words in the Chumash and then continue listening to the Baal Kareh. The other mitzvahs of Purim are, of course, the mitzvah of Mishlayach Manas, of sending at least one food parcel, maybe some even better to do two, of containing two different food items, different. Does not necessarily mean they have to be of a different blessing, different bracha. They can be the same bracha, as long as it's two full portions of food. That's all you need to do. And again, the purpose of Mishlach Manas is to create friendship, is to create brotherhood, is to create peace. And therefore, when deciding who you want to give to those people you feel would appreciate you're giving. Maybe someone you had a little bit of a tiff with during the year, and you want to smooth things over, and you want to make it better, and you want to make an overture of peace. A Shlach Manas parcel is an amazing way of being able to do that. One doesn't need to go over the top. It can be simple. It can be straightforward. It can be very practical, and those are the best kind of Shlach Manas parcels that one gets. Also, Matanis Lavyanim, one must give two gifts that will be given to two different poor people. You can give one amount, and the person who gives it out will then divide it up. I'm sure your rabbi is collecting, or you can find out where you can give the money to, in order that it should be distributed to the poor people that need it on Purim, because the main purpose of giving them the money is that they can buy what they would need to make themselves a proper suda, a proper feast on the Purim day. And that's very, very important. You could give even before Shabbos, and as long as it's given out to the poor people on Purim Day, that's what's important. And of course, final mitzvah is, of course, the feast, the Purim Seuda. It's a mitzvah to have a feast where you have bread and you have meat and even a little bit of wine. That's the realm of the festival. Obviously, in communities, people get quite involved. Sometimes they get too involved in the drinking part, but the main part of the Suda, as it's brought in Halacha, is to talk about the miracles that Hashem does, talk about the things there, the tremendous things that Hashem has done for us and is doing for us, and to daven, and that these things should continue, that we should be able to continue to witness miracles as we do by Yom Ma'im, as man as there was at that time. It's still happening today. Well, that's all the time we actually have. Just want to take the opportunity to wish every single person within the sound of my voice, first of all, a good Shabbos, and then a very, very, very freilichin and happy and meaningful and successful Chag HaPurim. May we taka be all bizarcha to celebrate together in the ultimate simcha of the coming of Mashiach. May it happen speedily, and may it happen in our day. To each and every one of our radio family, a beautiful good bench, the good chaps.